Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 80. And, Dave, I know the log is probably not perfect, but according to iTunes, we are closing in on Episode 1,000. And, hey, forget all that. The Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions.
Boy, I tell you, if there's one thing to be excited about today, if you are a Steelers fan, it is probably the fact that, it was the lesser of the two evils, really. And, you know, we talked, I think, either you and I or Alex and I talked about it on a podcast, you know. The only thing I have about the Eagles and their fan base is Eagles fans are just really, I mean, just look, this past year, a couple of them have punched some police horses, and obviously, there was a video of them, the way they were throwing stuff at Vikings fans several weeks ago. And then there's the whole Flyer fan thing that you tie into that. And, of course, years ago with the booing of Santa Claus and the throwing of the batteries. The Eagles, their fans alone are worth pretty much hating that team. Now, the team itself, there's some great stories there I'm sure we're going to cover here in just a little bit, not so much about them. But how could you not, if you're a Steelers fan, not be rooting for the Eagles in this game? And now, thankfully, they have given the Patriots their fifth loss as an organization in the Super Bowl. They prevented the Patriots from tying the Steelers in, with the most Super Bowl wins. So overall, this Monday, it's a great day to be a Steelers fan, David.
Yeah, it was. Listen, this was a great game. And
No, it wasn't.
I was going to say, look, there are different people. Different people are going to come out of a different way. Look, if you love defensive football, whatever. But man, there were so many plays made offensively, so many good catches. The entertainment value, the excitement value was high. I mean, I think I certainly understand games like this aren't for everybody. But the consensus, I think, today is that was a really entertaining, fun football game.
What the hell is fun about both teams going up and down the field in 7 and 8 plays? I mean, it's like 7-on-7 football. I mean,
this is the way the game's. This is where the game's headed. I mean, like it or not, it's not 1976.
I understand why the league wants it for the masses. The masses want scoring. But if I wanted that, I'd be enthralled in watching the
Big 12,
the Arena League, or the Big 12 every week. If I want that kind of,
you didn't have fun watching that game?
I really didn't. I mean,
throw that out to the audience. Did you enjoy yesterday's game?
Obviously, throw the outcome out of there. I mean, the outcome.
Yeah, just the game itself.
Because look. Outside of the sack fumble late in the game,
there weren't many big defensive plays for sure.
Right. I mean, name me a defensive play, and you can't have the interception because that ball probably should have been caught,
But you have to admit there were some great offensive plays. I mean, just the touchdown catches the Eagles made in that back left corner of the end zone. I mean, those were great catches.
Sure. I'm not denying that there were great plays made in the game, but. As there should be in every game that we watch on a week in, week out basis, there should be great plays made. I mean, these guys are professionals, 32 teams, 53 man roster, and only 40 whatever of them dress every week. There should be great plays made every week, but I am not captivated or entertained by, who has the ball last?
We'll agree to disagree on that one. I was pretty captivated and entertained by that game yesterday. And certainly the excitement factor, which is a little bit different, was incredibly high with that, down the stretch, close game. And, again, kind of clock management issues, Brady, after the comeback last year, all of those types of things. And the conversation you brought up that we had on Friday about Nick Foles and what is his value now? Well, his value to the Eagles and around the league has to be, you know, have it skyrocketed for what he did in the championship game and in the Super Bowl. And now the question is, if you're the Eagles, what do you do? I think the cap hit for Foles and Wentz is $14.5 million. So obviously it's a non-issue if they want to keep him. But as you raised the question, do you absolutely have to move him? Because I think your target of a two and a two, one this year, one next year, to me is a very reasonable price for a team like the Jets or, you know, obviously the Browns or, you know, the Arizona Cardinals, somebody like that. Are you pulling the trigger on that?
If I can get
on
a two,
either side
on either you, for just a two or
a two and a two. A two and a two.
No, two and a two is too rich. I don't think he's worth a two and a two. No.
So you don't think he's that good?
I think he's a
because
star.
A two and a two for a real NFL quarterback is a bargain, right? I mean, you know, for you think about what they gave up to go Carson Wentz and to get Goff and move up those guys, they gave up a ton.
I just don't think no. I think he's worth a two, one two, all right. And that's it because, I mean, let's face it, he is what, 29 and about to be 30. Not that means much in today's NFL for another 5-6 years out of him. But I think he is that guy that you can put in there for the next two years, help you transition to a younger quarterback type of thing and get you some wins on the way. I would be hesitant to give up two different second-round draft picks for a guy like that. Now, do the Eagles owe him anything at this point? No. I mean, they've got a great situation with him and really the best – I mean, arguably the best top two, you know, best quarterback situation in the league, right, at this time.
Sure. Yeah, you have to say for sure.
I mean, your backup is a Super Bowl MVP right now. Do they owe him anything? No. But with that said, should they think about dealing him? Well, obviously, you're not just going to give him away, and you're certainly probably not going to give him away in division. And I would probably even think twice about in conference, in the NFC. So, you know, what is that? You know, kind of narrow it down to as far as teams that you could actually deal him to. Obviously, the Browns is one of them. Who else in the AFC could Arizona? Or no, that's in the NFC. Who else in the AFC? I was building a list last night of teams. Miami, I mean, are you done with Tannehill over there? What about the Jets? The Jets would be a perfect landing spot for Nick Foles right now, right? You know, I mean.
Jets, Buffalo?
Maybe Buffalo with seeing what they're going to do with Tyrod Taylor there. Those are just a handful of teams. I mean, there's not many. You know, Cleveland in the AFC. Cleveland, the Jets, you know, I think everybody not expecting Denver to go that route. They're going to go probably Cousins or – I don't know. What if they don't get Cousins, though, you know?
Well, so, yes, there are a lot of teams who aren't going to get Cousins.
Right. So, for those that don't get Cousins, maybe Foles is a nice consolation prize moving forward. I just think a two and a two. You know, if you're talking maybe a two and a five, David – I could, or two and a four, maybe I could do that. You know, if there's one thing that we learned,
you're the one who threw out two and two on Friday, and I thought that was a great idea.
No, I think I said just a two, right?
I thought you said a two this year and a two next year.
No, I don't think I love
that. I just doesn't seem to me a lot to give up for a guy who's now proven that whether you think he's great or not, he's proven he can be a good NFL quarterback. That doesn't seem to me to be a lot to give up.
Well, here's the thing. What we learned last night is that Nick Foles can definitely play in this league. I mean,
no doubt.
Without a doubt, we learned that the big game's not too big for him, that if you have the right style – you know, RPO, aggressive kind of a coach. The game is not too big for him at all on any level. Now, you obviously have to surround him with the players. But, I mean, look at it overall. I mean, how many people knew Alshon, you know, average fan knew Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar and you know, Ertz is probably a little bit bigger name than both those guys right now. But I mean,
McDermott, nobody knows who McDermott is.
Right. You know, Jay Ajayi, people probably know him, LeGarrette Blount and all. But look, I mean, that was, you know, nobody's going to stack that wide receiver group up and say, hey, look at these guys over here. You know what I'm saying? So if you surround him with, you know, competent, that kind of level talent and a good offensive line and a decent 1-2 punch in the running game. Hey, but you know, he really, if there was one thing that I did enjoy in the Super Bowl game this year was watching him really overcome all the odds, you know, and play extremely well in that game.
He can play great.
Look, there's one thing that I don't, you know, I think if you probably go back on some of these podcasts in the past talking about Nick Foles, I've never taken issue with his ability to throw the football deep. And he's always had some level of mobility. I think there was one point during his career when he was a brief starter, people were saying, hey, he's able to escape things and extend plays a little bit like Ben Roethlisberger does. But, you know, I've never taken issue, I don't think, with the way he throws the deep ball. I think it's just everything else in between. It just goes to show.
So who's better, Nick Foles or Alex Smith?
Are they similar? Nick Foles has done it more often, I think. Obviously, I've been more impressed with Nick Foles' deep ball than I have Alex Smith's deep ball throughout the two players' careers.
Are they similar? I mean, Smith's obviously a little bit older. They're both pretty mobile. Smith threw the deep ball great this year.
Are you trying to say I'd have to dive into some of what Nick Foles does on third down and all like that. But, I mean, do you consider Nick Foles a game manager and all, you know, that kind of?
No, sure don't.
I don't. I mean.
But I don't think Alex Smith has to be that either. I mean, some of that's kind of the offense you get put in. Who would you rather have for the next 2 years?
Boy, that's a tough question. I'd like to play with Foles a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I'd like him. You know, look, I think it's hard to argue with the guy who just came off that, you know, the past two performances that he had. You know, the throw on – you know, go through the plays, the throw on fourth down from his own side of the field to Torrey Smith. How about Torrey Smith, getting things done? Just the throws he made, as you said, some of the deep throws were excellent. It was a really, really good performance by Nick Foles. And obviously, you know, the whole game offensively for both teams were great performances. You know, if you want to get into some of the, you know, the play calling, Doug Peterson did a great job. I think you can certainly, though, question some of the calls around the goal line where they threw the football. Zach Ertz, just in the first drive, Zach Ertz gets the motion penalty, the illegal motion penalty. That killed him because you had to think that was two down, get a touchdown territory. And then the gadget play, as you mentioned, I mean, you got a guy, you know, Burton, a former quarterback at Florida. But, you know, if that play doesn't work, you're going to get crucified because you put the ball in the hands of a guy who's not been in those situations, thrown to a guy who never, his job is not to catch the football on the biggest play of the season, and it worked perfectly. Although, as you pointed out, you know, maybe they didn't have the formation right.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about them. While you were talking, David, I was looking this up. Of course, the sample size of the two players, Alex Smith's obviously started a lot, a lot more games and thrown deep a lot more. Alex Smith and his career deep passing percentage is now 43%. Now, these are throws that travel down the football field more than 15 yards in the air, 43%, and he's attempted almost 700 deep passes during his career. Nick Foles has attempted a little less than half of those, 300 of them, and his career completion percentage is 37.3%. So 37.3 versus 43% for Alex Smith. I would have guessed that without looking at those numbers that Foles was a little bit closer to Alex Smith. But once again, the sample size is obviously a little bit different there. Now, Nick Foles does have 27 deep pass touchdowns, whereas Alex Smith has 48. Alex Smith does have 33 deep pass interceptions, whereas Foles has 15. So just throw that out there. Now, what were you saying? Oh, the illegal formation there. leave it to
the. What was the issue with the formation that Foles was not set and.
No, the biggest thing was the wide
somebody
receiver.
Somebody outside him covered him up.
Right, the wide receiver up at the top of the screen has to cover the tackle up.
He covered him up or he didn't cover him up?
He did not cover him up.
If
you look at the wide receiver at the top of the screen, he is yard and a half, I guess, off the line, and you're supposed to cover the tight end, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the end of the line.
The end of the line guy, yeah.
The tackle. And that was the thing. And they're saying, you're going to be reading about that today and tomorrow and Patriots fans complaining about that. But, here's the thing. Peterson or Foles and I forget who else they interviewed said they practiced that. They've been practicing that play for like the last three weeks. And then they ran it like in practice, I think they said something like three times this past week, and it was run perfect every time. And that's what, what's funny is it comes on the heels of the Patriots running a similar type play. Earlier in the game, it's almost like, all right, we were going to one-up you here that way. But, the biggest thing I think with Doug Peterson, and he obviously said this after the game as well too, you have to stay aggressive throughout a game.
He stayed aggressive. Look, they went for at two or three fourth downs, and obviously they converted those. They converted some long third downs, and look, they made one huge error toward the end. We'll get to, but just in those drives when they were up in the second half, they came out the wheel routes on first down. That was a huge play. Obviously, took them right down the field. They were throwing the football on early downs off play action, and they kept throwing the football. They didn't go run pass like Jacksonville did, or in Jacksonville's case, it was run pass deep and end up with third and long situations. The play calling was great, and they executed great. So yes, Doug Peterson, great play calling. The one huge mistake, obviously, that I know everybody knows was it. Alshon Jeffrey, I guess it was, running out of bounds on that first and 10 play where he gets the first down with 209 left, which really was a terrible decision because the clock goes all the way to the 2-minute warning if he stays in bounds, even if it's second and one, and then they can run from there. And the Patriots did it, the Eagles ran a play that took less than 9 seconds, so it's 2:02 left, so first down's gone, and you're going to get a free timeout with second down because the play took 7 seconds and not, 10 seconds. So that was a huge error that gave I am sure many people, myself included, figured the Patriots were going to go right down the field and score. And they didn't. But, that's how you lose games. And, again, we get into the minutia of stuff. And I know you're talking about one play and a guy staying in bounds or not in bounds. But just think about it. If Jeffrey stays in bounds on that play, they get the first down. The 2-minute warning comes, so you run first down, and it's 1:55. But then you get to click it off the next two plays, and the whole perception. It would have been like the Patriots basically having the last drive, but having it a drive before, and instead they got two more possessions. They get an extra possession out of it, which could have killed them. But anyway.
You know, one thing I don't think is going to be talked a lot about, and really for both teams in this game, is how both teams effectively ran the football, David. You look at the Eagles alone with LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi, they rushed for like, what, 147 yards on 23 carries, and both averaged over 6 yards per carry. When you're averaging over 6 yards per carry, that makes the other thing that stuck out in the game, the play action that Nick Foles ran, that much more effective, in my opinion. Boy, it was tiring to see Collinsworth call some of those play action plays RPOs. You know, I mean, there was, don't get me wrong, there were quite a bit of RPOs in that game, but boy, was he mislabeling quite a few of those. But if you're able to run the football effective in the game, which really both teams were able to do
right from the get-go too. I mean, they were gouging them early.
And how much, you know, that's probably something we should get to at some point too, was the lack of tackling and just the poor run defense. I'm okay if you just blow people, you know, which you know they did for the most part. I thought the Eagles did, but there were a lot of missed tackles on both sides of the football, you know, for both defenses, and especially New England. One thing, when I was going back through the game, I kept thinking, man, they sure missed a lot of tackles. And then you have a guy like James Harrison on that long touchdown run, who was it, by Blount, that there was no edge set there by James Harrison, who's, you know, normally still to this day regarded as one of the league's better outside linebackers when it comes to setting the edge. When you're able to run the ball at 6 yards a clip, and really the Patriots, I think they averaged 5.1 as well. When you're able to do that, it really allows you to do a lot of different things in the passing game, especially when it comes to play action. What does this kind of mean? Trying to fit the Steelers into this. One thing that I think me and maybe you and a lot of people listening to this podcast wish that we've seen would have liked to have seen more of the last two or three seasons is play action out of Ben. And Ben, for most part for his career, when you look at his play action numbers, absolutely fantastic. So maybe there's a little bit to be learned there when it comes to play action. And probably one thing that you're not going to read about a lot the rest of, you know, this next week is about how good really the running game was for both teams.
Yeah, no doubt. And you look at it, I mean, anybody who had, you know, substantive carries, they were all averaging, you know, 6 yards. I mean, it was, you know, Deion Lewis was 9 for 39 at 4.3. He was the low guy in the game who had more than one carry. And, you know, Blount, 6.4, Ajayi, 6.3, James White, 6.4, Burkhead, 6.0. And, you know, again, not to beat this horse that we're going to get into with Le'Veon Bell, but
and I'm glad that was a direction I was hoping you were going to go right here. Carry on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at running back by committee, and you know, you look at the money these guys are making. You got LeGarrette Blount with 14 carries, Ajayi with 9, and Clement with 1, and then Clement with 4 receptions for 100 yards on one side. You look at the other side: James White, 7 carries; Deion Lewis, 9 carries; Burkhead, 3 carries. And then Burkhead has a catch for 46 yards. White has 2 catches for 21 yards. I mean, you know, the Steelers roster currently today isn't set up to be running back by committee. They don't, you know, they don't have the guys to necessarily do that. But if you had a situation, and again, you know, people get upset when I throw names out, but let's just, you know, you're going to have James Conner back. He's on a treadmill. He's making progress. You would think if he's on a treadmill today on February 1st, then, you know, by July 31st, you would expect he'd be in reasonably good shape. Who knows what they'll do with Stephen Ridley. But the idea that, you know, you continue to pay over a long-term contract to Le'Veon Bell at $15 million, there are certainly other ways to do it, let's just say, and we saw it with these two teams in the Super Bowl.
We have seen how many times teams do it without a leading rusher. You know,
well, last year, you know, the Falcons had two guys who were and look, they paid Freeman this year, but they had two guys who were, you know, incredibly important. And obviously the Patriots had the same thing with a group of backs. It wasn't exactly the same group of backs. Burkhead wasn't there. But, you know, the guys that you know, they had Blunt there with White and Lewis. You had, you know, it was a have guys come in and do the roles they're asked for different roles, and they each, you know, if every guy plays 25 snaps, so be it.
Look, just look, you know, one other thing that stuck out to me in that game was how he was able to rotate the personnel in the backfield with Blunt and Ajayi. Not even Ajayi, but that Clement kid. You want to talk about a guy that probably you need to circle as far as his contributions in that game. 100 yards receiving, David. That wheel route was just great. The touchdown out of the slot there was absolutely phenomenal. He provided.
Hey, and by the way, another rookie that, you know, didn't do, you know, in regular season he carried it 74 times for 321 yards. But you know, he's got. We list all. We talk all about all the good rookie running backs. He was not a guy who was on people's list.
And remember, they have even Barner there, right?
Yeah, he didn't. I don't know. Did he dress? I didn't see him play.
Yeah, he returned 3 kickoffs for 73 yards. How nice would it have to have a guy returning 24 points?
Yeah, you know, I love me some Kenyon Barner. So.
And how many times have we kind of talked about, oh, look at, you know, whether it be, I don't know, preseason or whatever, or the like, wasn't it when the Steelers lost to the Eagles last, weren't we talking a little bit about Kenyon Barner in or ahead of that game or something like that?
Didn't
he have a couple of nice runs in that game or something like
that? Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we saw him a little bit, I think, in the game against the Vikings. Is that it? But, I mean, look, they tried. You got backs. You don't have enough touches to get guys in there. And look, Kenyon Barner is not a guy you're going to hand the ball to 15 times a game, but he could certainly catch the ball out of the backfield. Maybe Clement, you know, surpassed him in that role. But you know, this kid's a rookie out of Wisconsin. I don't even remember. I'm looking up what round he was drafted, Dave. I mean, I'm guessing it was, you know, fifth or later. Where are you going to go? Where are you going to go with the in this offseason? You keep seeing this stuff.
Corey Clement was an undrafted free agent.
There you go. So, right. So he declared after the 2015. So I'm just trying to look. I didn't even know his background. So, yeah. So 2016, first team all Big Ten, and then goes undrafted free agent. Well, there you go. Another guy.
And, you know, we've talked about Giovanni Bernard. Look at Duke Johnson. That guy has Steeler written all over him, doesn't he? I mean, he was a guy that can catch the ball out of the back.
Well, he can certainly be your guy, your third down receiving back. I mean, you know, that he really has moved more as much as a pass catcher more than a running back the way they used him. And yeah, he was a third round pick, right? He's a capable guy. There are going to be guys out there.
They are going to be guys out there, and I, you know, and if you think that
Chris Ivory's going to be one of them,
if you look at even your second highest paid running back in the league at just over $8 million per, how much are some of these guys going to cost you per? You know,
2-3. Tops at 4. Not paying anybody more than 4.
I mean, you could get 3 or 4 of those guys, right? And then, you know, keep your fingers crossed. Now, obviously, nobody's given up on James Conner yet. And you know, if he comes back healthy, look, in the few times that James Conner handled the football during his rookie season, clipping off 7, 8, 9 yards, right? You know, now is he the an every down guy, you know, carrying the football 28 times a game for you? Probably not.
But physically he can be, for sure. He's big enough.
Right. But I mean, he could be more of your thunder as a LeGarrette Blunt type runner, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the point is, if you go that way, you don't have to have a guy be that. That's part of the point.
Right. So, I mean, props to the Eagles with how they've been able to mix and match and you know, the good thing about it is you know, you can do just that in your formations and your personnel groupings, because every one of those backs can carry the football when it comes down to it. And every one of those backs, you know, except for Blunt, obviously, is a pass catcher, you know. But I mean, Blunt's caught a few in during his career as well too. But how is the pass protection on each one of those guys? Yeah, I can't answer that right now. But You know, look, I mean, it was a great game plan, and back to really what got us started on this topic is Doug Peterson just staying aggressive in all situations. And really, when you don't in a Super Bowl, particularly and against a team like New England Patriots, and we learned that in the Super Bowl the year before, no matter how big a lead that you get, you better keep the foot on the gas. And especially now that we seem to be in a league where David, should the Patriots, should the Patriots cut every one of their defensive players?
how about Malcolm? Let's get to the Malcolm Butler thing, because this is interesting. Beginning of the season, you know, Malcolm Butler, there were games early in the season where Malcolm Butler got benched, Eric Rowe was playing, but you know, you're obviously going to play a lot of nickel and some dime. And you got a guy like Malcolm Butler on the sidelines. And it was a really odd scene when they brought it up early in the game and showed that he was, you know, appeared to be in tears during the anthem, was playing special teams. And if you saw the quote, basically he said, you know, they gave up on me, F it. And that was that. And, Belichick got asked about it. Obviously, he's not going to answer that question to try to put his team in the best position to win. But that was, you got a guy here who's, you know, many people think he's probably one of the 10 or 15 best corners in the league, and he doesn't play for you in a big game. That's an odd situation.
Yeah, it is, and one I'm sure Patriots fans are all over today talking about. Of course, losing Brandon Cooks early in the game to a concussion, really, I mean, the Patriots were able to get past that, obviously. There was that one, you know, Rob Gronkowski, it took him a while to get started. But, boy, that one drive there in the second half sure resembled the one that they had against the Steelers, complete with a dropped interception and all early in that drive as well, too. People probably remember Sean Davis dropped one that hit him right in the – right in the worst spot, the hands, or in that game against the Patriots, you know, week 15 there. But once he got on track there, they were able to move the football, and there is going to be a lot of talk about Malcolm Butler, and yeah, I mean, obviously he's gone, right?
he got asked after the game what's next for him, and he said, "I ain't Miss Cleo, so I can't tell the future."
Yeah, he's going to be somewhere else for sure. Yeah. James Harrison, that was his last snap of his NFL career, right?
I mean, you asked me a month ago, and I obviously would have said yes. He played 68 snaps in that game. The Patriots obviously found him to be, you know, an upgrade on, you know, what they had to offer. Look, it's clear the Steelers blew this whole thing, okay? Whatever you think of James Harrison and how things went his way, the Steelers blew this, and you can argue from Harrison's performance, they blew it in a variety of ways. One was not playing him, and then if you had obviously played him, you don't have the issue of having to cut him and then having him go to New England and be a contributing member of the defense. So this is on the Steelers and their coaching staff, period, full stop. Now, did James Harrison handle things right and all of the above? Well, the answer is he got what he wanted, so it's hard to necessarily argue. And if you look at the timeline of James Harrison asking to be released, blah, 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 the Steelers should have just continued to say no, and then we wouldn't be having any of these conversations. But if you're James Harrison, it worked out the way you wanted it to work out, because you went out there and proved that you can still be a competent NFL player, which he proved that over his time in New England. He is still a competent NFL player. So, Dave, I don't think there are a lot of teams that are going to be in a hurry to sign James Harrison, and I don't think James Harrison would sign with most teams, but I wouldn't put it at zero. I'd put it at 20%, 15%, which is unlikely. But I wouldn't put it at zero that was his last NFL snaps.
I'll put it just slightly above zero. I think he's done. I just can't see. He's not going to go play for Cleveland.
No, he's not. He's not going to go play for Kansas City. Would he go play for Cleveland? I don't know.
If he wants to win, he's going to go play for a team that gives him a chance to win a championship, and that's not going to be in Cleveland.
You go play for the Ravens?
Nah, they need to move on too. From Suggs is getting up there in eight. No, I don't see it there.
Well, there's two different things. What teams want him and what teams would he go play for?
Right.
He played for the Ravens in the past.
And that's going to be a small list. It's going to be an extremely small list, and I just don't see it. I think the Patriots are on that list, but, I mean, come on. I mean, you know.
The Patriots going to ask him to camp?
Nah, I don't think they will. And he's not going to sign for the minimum anyway. I mean, he signed for the minimum at the end of the season here, but is he really going to come back and play for the minimum?
Well, he just did it, so, I mean, you know, close enough to the minimum that it wasn't a big deal.
Right, but he had already gotten paid by the Steelers, though, so.
No, but, I mean, he wasn't getting paid anything by the Steelers, right? What did he make? He didn't make even $2 million, did he?
Well, I mean, you know, when you figure the what he pocketed, you know, if you were to break out.
Just the Steelers contract. What was his contract, $1.5 million? It's pretty close to the minimum.
No, it was a little bit more than that. Hold on a minute here. But, I mean, look, I mean, he, okay, let's see. It was a 2-year contract. That's not what I want. That's not what I want either.
Blah blah, James Harris.
Yeah,
and James Harris.
Yeah, dead air is never. I don't have it on. I don't have it on. I don't have it on the.
Yeah, I got it. I'll have it. Just give me 1 second. Keep talking. So well, anyway, so the Patriots. The question about their defense is a legit question, right? I mean, it's where do they go? How are they going to restructure? What are they going to do?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, is Matt Patricia overrated? I mean, here he is going to.
Yeah, so he had a 2-year, $3.5 million contract. And, you know, depending, I don't know exactly, but it was roughly average annual value is 1.7. The point being is I don't think he's going to ask for a lot of money if he wants to play. And so I don't think it's going to be a financial decision. We can't afford James Harrison at $1.5 million or $1.75 million. I don't think that's going to be the driving factor.
Yeah,
how about his list of teams he's played for in his career? Steelers, Ravens, Bengals, Patriots. Talk about, you know, rolling right around the Pittsburgh core.
Yeah. Not much to speak of when it comes to the Bengals' career or the Ravens' career, really. I mean.
No, nothing.
You know,
nothing.
With either one of those teams. I mean, I'm not going out right here at the start of the off season and signing him. No, I'm waiting till after June. I'm waiting till after June, you know, to decide whether or not James Harris is going to be unemployed for a long time. And are you really going to get to that point past June 1st? You know, after
there's zero chance he's coming back to Pittsburgh, right? Zero.
Oh yeah, zero. He's not coming back to Pittsburgh. No. Once he was cut, that was it. I would be absolutely shocked. And look, going back to that decision, people saying, well, you said he didn't have anything left. I never said James Harrison didn't have anything left to offer the Steelers. I explained the whole time throughout this process why he was not playing. All right, based on where he was on a depth chart, based on him not playing special teams, based on the number situation, and that's why, in my opinion, it was easy for me to predict what all went on right from the get-go. And the lip service they were giving Watt out of training camp about how he's so quick to pick up the defense and the way the Steelers want to get those first-round draft picks on the field as soon as possible and playing as highest percentage of snaps as they could. I never said that he couldn't play. I was just saying that this is why he wasn't playing. Now, if you look at between him and Arthur Motes, the guy that was getting a helmet instead of James Harrison, which one should you have been dressing? Okay, we see now that with New England, James Harrison could play special teams. Now, how effective he was on special teams, you know, is obviously a conversation. But, you know, how effective was Arthur Motes on special teams throughout the season? A lot of you probably didn't even know he was playing special teams, you know, on punt coverage or when he was out there. And there wasn't a lot of the snaps anyway. You're talking about 4, 5, 6 snaps a game. So what it comes down to is, should they have been dressing James Harrison over Arthur Motes? And then, even though James Harrison doesn't play a lot or hadn't played a lot on the left side of the Steelers defense throughout his career, he still has done it. He still can do it. It's probably not his favorite side. And if it comes down to that, we saw TJ play on the left side. You could have carved out 20-25% maybe of snaps for James Harrison to get on the field and move Watt over to the left side and then sit Bud Dupree down. However, if you do that, it is eternal damnation on Bud Dupree, right? And we'll know here in the here's the thing. You want to get mad if you're a Steelers fan and you're listening to this. Listen to this podcast, you want an opportunity to get mad. If the Steelers don't pick up the fifth-year option on Bud Dupree in a couple weeks, you can roll all this James Harrison, Arthur Motes, Bud Dupree, TJ Watt thing into one big ball and get really mad, right?
Yeah, I'll be surprised if that's the case, but sure. I mean, let's move on from James.
All right, but because what does that mean? They weren't happy with what Bud Dupree did, you know, during the season, and they probably could have had a little bit better pass rusher out there in James Harrison. So file that away while you listen to this podcast, that if they don't pick up that fifth-year option on Bud Dupree, and there's a good chance that they won't, you can really
– I'll disagree with that. I'd say it's 80-20 they pick it up.
I think it's 50-50, David. I mean, we'll see. All right. But, I mean, it just if they don't, Steeler fans have a really a lot to get mad at when it comes to this past season, the way James.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and you watch, you know, the Patriots, yeah, LeGarrette Blount, you know, wins the Super Bowl with them last year and wins it with the Eagles this year. And he was a petulant guy, stomped his way out of Pittsburgh, and obviously – the Patriots have put up with his behavior, and he left on good terms. They did, you know, what do you have, 18 touchdowns a year ago, and they didn't bring him back. And he goes to Philly, and he said all the right things about being a team guy, and everybody needs to touch the ball, and Ajayi, and everything else. And I was laughing at the quotes going into the game. It sounds like, you know, LeGarrette Blount was good at, he was Ali Villanueva as a teammate. I mean, it was just, it said all the right things. And obviously, he had a huge game, and I don't know how many Super Bowl rings that is for him now, Dave. I can't remember tracking his career, but he's got – how many does he have? It's more than just the two, right?
Who, LeGarrette?
Yeah.
He has – let's see if his Wikipedia has been he's a three-time Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, there you go. So that beats anybody on the Steelers, right? Ben's got two. And nobody on the Steelers has three. So there you go with LeGarrette Blount. Okay, so the Patriots are going to lose their offensive and defensive coordinator. There are going to be changes there. Brady's already said he's coming back. Be shocked if Belichick's not coming back. The offense is going to look the same. They're going to have Julian Edelman back. The interesting quote out of their locker room was Rob Gronkowski saying he's going to take a couple weeks and think about things. And you see the hits Gronk has taken over the years. He is maybe the best tight end to ever play the game. On that opening drive of the second half, honestly, you can wonder. I think it's okay to wonder, like, why don't you just throw him the ball every play? Because nobody can cover him. I mean, he had 15 targets in that game, and they had that drive there where, you know, he gets four straight targets, three straight targets and four catches to open that drive in the second half. And it's not that they got away from him, but he has the touchdown catch. He's unstoppable. It would be unfortunate for football if he didn't continue playing, because he's one of the best ever.
Is he Hall of Fame right now if he walked away?
I know he hasn't played quite as long as your typical Hall of Famer, but once guys like Help me with the Denver running back. I'm drawing a blank. Who played
Terrell Davis?
Terrell Davis, yeah. You know, a great postseason player who only had, I think, 8 productive seasons. I think Gronk, yeah, I think Gronk has been that good that even today, what's he played? 7 or 8 seasons? Is that about right?
2010 was through 2017.
Yeah, so, you know, he probably, I mean, I think he probably gets in, but a couple more years, and obviously he's the shoe-in because he is in the conversation with – because he's – and again, it's harder to evaluate a tight end's blocking you because everybody wants to look at stats when stats are available, but he is obviously a dominating inline blocker as well. So
I think, you know, if he can get himself to that 10,000-yard receiving mark, he's at 7,000 now, three more – you know, 3-4 more seasons, and he's obviously a lock at that point. But the thing is about players, once they get out of the league for 5 years and then are eligible, are you able to transcend their stats and, you know, make it's obviously it's easier for skill positions than it is, say, offensive linemen and along those lines. But he's unstoppable when he's on the field, and that's how he needs to be remembered right now at this point during his career. Is he a Hall of Famer right now if this was it? You know, probably, but it's definitely can be argued, right?
So on the defensive side for the Patriots, is it a complete retooling? I mean, it feels like they have the personnel, and some of the personnel, maybe Patrick Chung's not going to be the guy anymore, but it feels like they have some of the personnel in the secondary. Kyle Van Noy is a capable player. Flowers is a capable player. I know you wrote something about Matt Patricia. When you get picked apart by, when you get dominated by Blake Bortles and the Jags in the first half of a championship game, you get picked apart by Nick Foles. You had a tough start to the season, but a very good finish to the season. And just they don't have enough good athletes on defense, right? Is that what it is? They don't have enough good athletic players?
They just they mix and match. I mean, I tell you, there's one thing that Bill Belichick does is he's not married to building to the draft. He will build through free agency in a heartbeat, right?
Absolutely.
And
I think he's traded every draft pick he's had over the last 5 years. He's traded it, literally traded it for another draft pick. I think there have only been a couple draft picks that he has not actually traded in a package of something. I mean, he still ends up with 5 or 7 picks, but they all get moved for some other kind of package.
If you go back and you look at the start of this season, how horrible that pass defense was, but then it got fixed. You know, midpoint of the season on. I mean, their adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat for that second half of the season was just incredibly good. You know, it kind of reminded you a little bit of the Steelers the previous season where they were so horrible the first half and then they turn around second half there. Who gets the credit there? Is it the mixing and matching by Belichick? Is it Matt Patricia and being able to scheme this thing together with the ones that we have? Well, we're fixing to find out, because obviously they're going to have a new defensive coordinator here in New England, along with a new offensive coordinator, and we're going to see just how, you would think Matt Patricia's fingerprints are going to be all over that defense and where Detroit, right? And go from there. So, it just goes to show you there's two different schools of thought as how to build teams. You know, you have teams like the Steelers that prefer to build it through the draft and with just a very small sprinkling of free agency. And then you have teams like the Patriots who, they'll throw you on the trash heap in a hurry and go out and bring someone in from the outside, at any given moment. Two different schools of thoughts, there. So it'll be interesting to see. I expect them to try to address a lot of it during. They'll obviously have Hightower back, right?
Let's not forget that. That's a big deal.
They're going to have Hightower back. Didn't they lose a defensive lineman? Well, Branch was hurt most of the year. In fact, he was inactive last night, right? Alan Branch. I don't know what his contract situation is. There's a reason a lot that the odds came out today, and the Patriots are favored to win the next Super Bowl, right? You know, that people expect them to be able to, as long as you have Tom Brady and some of those offensive weapons, they expect
Bill Belichick.
And Bill Belichick, they expect the rest to take care of itself.
On injured reserve this year, Shea McClellan was one of their guys. Malcolm Mitchell, the receiver, Julian Edelman, obviously. Hightower, Martellus Bennett, but he's not going to be back. Derek Rivers, the kid we liked, we all liked out of Youngstown State.
Yeah,
right?
And that's enough reason not to re-sign James Harrison right there.
Yeah, there's your guy that their third. I think he went in the third round of them. They're gonna. That's two big. Marcus Cannon, another guy, at the end. Two big time defensive players and a big time offensive player. They're going to get back, and you know, Steeler fans remember the loss of Shazier was obviously he was an irreplaceable player and it was a huge one. But the Steelers went through most of the season a relatively healthy football team.
Yeah, you really knew. You know, that's a sad thing that to tack on to how the Steelers season went this year and why another level of to add to the level of disappointment is just how healthy they actually were. Now, obviously, you know, you have to put an exponential, you know, on Ryan Shazier because that, you know, that was it. That's just such a huge loss that was. I mean, that's your quarterback of your defense, and we saw how Sean Spence tried to – I mean, just look at how the mix and match they tried to do and what wasn't so much mix, you know, there at the end there. It was all Sean Spence and – they really missed Ryan Shazier, and that's you know, assuming that he's not going to be able to play next year, that's a huge, huge hole they have to fill.
And let's throw out the good news, obviously, that the reports came out over the weekend that Ryan Shazier is in a walking program, some sort of, you know, obviously this is all rehabilitation stuff, but I saw the phrase regained feeling in his legs, so you know, those are great signs of progress here 3 months in to be able to do that. Again, we'll just see where things go from here. But when he left the hospital, I know there was some frustration amongst fans and understandably just, you know, wishing for the best and just looking for an update. Well, this is the update now. And things, you know, we're seeing signs of progress from him from the very beginning, being able to attend a Steeler game. That was a huge deal that he wasn't stuck in a hospital bed. And now we're hearing that he's walking. So good news.
Absolutely. Le'Veon Bell, what did you think about his Radio Row tour?
So I saw the TMZ interview, which was, you know, 45, 50 seconds, where he said, you know, again, if you get asked the question, you know, could you really retire? Obviously, you're not going to just – your answer is going to be yes, I'll think about it. So whatever, I dismiss all that stuff. And then, you know, he did say he wanted to remain a Steeler, said he is, you know, already tired of the negotiating stuff. I don't know that he's actually involved in the negotiations or that negotiations are going on. Certainly he's going to be asked about it everywhere he goes, but – yeah, that's most of what I heard. I kind of don't read most of the stuff on Le'Veon Bell right now.
He's not retiring.
Of course not. I mean, there's zero chance he's not sitting out. He's not retiring. He doesn't get freedom by sitting out a year. The Steelers still have the ability to tag him. He's going to give up a ten plus million dollar season that he'll never get back. There's zero chance he doesn't play football next year.
Right. And him using, trying to even use this as a threat is, it's so cute to see Steelers players try to threaten the Steelers front office, right? You know, as far as nobody's going to be held. The Steelers are not going to be held hostage here. And here's the thing: when he was on NFL Network and talking to those guys and talking about guaranteed money and all like that, he threw out what was the numbers that he threw out? Was it $70 million and 17? He said, "Hold on here." He says, "Yeah." When talking about his negotiations, he says, "Yeah, a lot of it." is about the guarantees. That's what a long-term deal really is. You know, you want that security to it. That's why I said I'll play on. That's why I said I'll play on the tag. All that's going to be guaranteed. All of that's going to be guaranteed. You want to tag me again? Okay. All that's going to be guaranteed. That's how I kind of look at it, because I don't want to sign a long-term deal and everybody says I signed for $70 million, but only the first year is guaranteed. So the first $17 million that you make in that year, that's the only year that's guaranteed. He threw out those numbers while kind of, you know, people think they're arbitrary, but yo, if you 5 year $70 million averages out to $14 million a season, right? What's 70 divided by 70 divided by five is $14 million a season. That's a little less than what he would earn on the franchise tag this year. And $17 million, remember me talking about $18 million signing bonus a few shows ago. Should we, if he signs a long-term deal, would you expect him to get more than $17-18 million guaranteed? Now, mind you, you know, they'll throw in there, you know, the first 3 years are skill injury guarantees, but those are not fully guaranteed. When you're talking at full guarantees, and for players that don't play the quarterback position, when it comes to these long-term deals, I've said this time and time again, usually only the first year money, the signing bonus, and maybe, you know, the base salary is all that you know, the Steelers fully guaranteed. I mean, you go back and look at the Cameron Hayward contract, look at the David DeCastro contract, you look at the Stephon Tuitt contract, and people will say, well, yeah, look, they, you know, the difference is the amount of tag, and maybe that's why you give Bell. What would you guarantee Bell, you know, $30 million?
You know, $25 million, whatever, you know, 2 years, $25 million ish. I mean,
it's all virtually guaranteed. Look, the Steelers have a long history when they sign these guys to these lucrative deals of paying out all of it.
Yeah, know? Lamar Woodley's the exception.
Right. You have guys like Lamar Woodley, of course, but I mean injuries, you know, he just couldn't stay on the field. And
that's gonna be the issue if it comes to Bell, right? It's gonna be injury stuff.
Well, that and drugs, you know, him and keeping his nose clean, right? You know.
By the way, did you do all those the odds on all those teams? The Pats at 5-1, the Steelers at 12-1 or tied for fourth? Packers and Eagles, how the Packers and Eagles 9-1? Vikings, Steelers at 12-1. Falcons, Cowboys, Rams, Saints at 18-1. You're gonna give your 50-1 stat.
Yeah, I listed all these this morning on the site from Five Dimes, from our buddy RJ at Pre. I got to hook up with him. He's in Las Vegas. I should have already hooked up with him by now.
Yeah.
And
the 50-1. Give the 50-1. The Eagles.
Oh yeah, this time last year you could have bought the Eagles at 50-1.
Oh, we got the answers to all the props, by the way. Here are the answers. If you heard us on Friday, Pink came in at under 2 minutes. She knocked it out of the park, right? What did you think of the halftime show?
What did I think of it?
Yeah.
I didn't. I'm not into that. I'm not into JT.
You don't watch it?
I watched it. I'm just not into it.
So you didn't like it?
Nah.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I thought Pink was great. She came in with the white blonde hair. That's a winner, 5-4. Not airborne. That one, she didn't screw up any of the words. Will she say Eagles before or during or after the national anthem? The answer was no to that. Will she wear any Eagles gear? No to that. Will any scoring drive take less time than it takes Pink to sing the national anthem? I think she came in at like 155. The answer was yes to that. Robert Kraft was mentioned first in the broadcast. They were shown simultaneously, though, on the screen. Doug Peterson was mentioned first ahead of Big Bill Belichick. Peterson was shown first. Belichick's hoodie was blue. Who will be shown first on TV, Foles or Brady? Foles wins that. Over-under on Donald Trump tweets on February 5th, it was under 5. Trump was not mentioned during the broadcast. That was no. We didn't play that one. Tom Brady's age mentioned under 1.5 times was the winner there. How many times will Robert Kraft? Oh wait, how many times will Carson Wentz be mentioned on the broadcast? 3.5 times went over. How many times will Robert Kraft be shown on the broadcast? Over 2.5. How many times Giselle? Over 1.5. Will Donovan McNabb's vomiting incident be mentioned during the broadcast? That came in as no. Will Terrell Owens be mentioned during the broadcast? Now, this is from kickoff to the end of the game. That came in as no. We'll get to the Hall of Fame in a second. How many times will the temperature outside the stadium be mentioned during the broadcast? That is still under review, and the over-under was one. No wardrobe, the wardrobe malfunction under 1.5. Janet Jackson under 1.5. How many clips from Super Bowl 39 under 1.5? How many times will the Rocky statue be shown during the broadcast? Under one. Will Nipplegate be said during the broadcast? The answer was no. Will Al Michaels refer to the spread on the game? That came in as a no, a little surprisingly. Will anyone except Brady and Foles take a snap in the game? Well, we got that one right. That was a yes. Will Timberlake wear a hat? That was no. Will Timberlake cover a Prince song? That was yes, obviously Minneapolis. Will any members of NSYNC perform with Timberlake? That was no. And who will the Super Bowl MVP mention first in his speech? The choices were teammates, God, city, coach, owner, family. None of the above, and it came in as God. Nick Foles hit that first. That was the number two favorite at 4-1. Eagles, obviously, plus 5. First half, Eagles plus 3. Money line, Eagles at plus 160. Over 21, Eagles points over 10.5. Eagles first half points over Patriots, 27 points. Patriots first half, 13.5 was under. Will Brady win the MVP and the Super Bowl? Came in at no. Will a QB throw for more than 400 yards? This was plus 300. That was a winner. Will anyone else take a snap? That's, again, a winner. Points to the margin of victory, the Eagles at 7-12 came in at 15-2. The highest, you hit the highest quarter, Dave, the second quarter at 7-4. Which team will score first? Will the team that scores first win the game? That was yes. Will the first play be a run or a pass? I think I hit that one at pass. We had some missed kicks, all sorts of things. How many yards will the first touchdown be? Came in at 26-39. That was 5-1. Will be there be a score in the final 2 minutes of the first half? Was a yes. Over 5.5 touchdowns was a yes. Longest touchdown, surprisingly, 43.5 yards came in under. Shortest touchdown came in under. 1.5 yards came in under. The largest lead of the game of 13. That was under. First turnover of the game was an interception. And then will there be a missed extra point? That came in as a yes at plus 250. No overtime. No special teams TDs. Will there be a two-point successful conversion? That came in no. There was obviously an attempt. No safety. No onside kick. They say no flea flicker attempted in the game. So none of those double reverse passes and stuff was considered a flea flicker. That's kind of – I feel like the pass to Brady and the pass to Foles are – those are flea flickers to me. They flea flickers to you?
No.
You got to give it back to the quarterback or something?
Yeah.
All right. Total number of penalties under 12.5. No excessive celebration. No roughing the passer. Sacks under 4.5. Longest successful field goal under 47.5. Foles was the second favorite at MVP of 13-4. And Alshon Jeffries paid 12-1 with the first touchdown. And then we can get into the player props and all that. But you get the gist. Let's give a couple of the player props because we went through some of these. Foles have a higher QBR rating than Brady. The answer was no, but they were both over 100. It was passer rating. Passer yards, Foles over 235. Foles over 1.5 touchdowns. Completions, Foles over 22.5. Over 33.5 attempts. Brady over 285 yards. Brady over 2 touchdowns. Brady over 25.5 completions. Brady over 37.5 attempts. Amendola had the most receiving yards. That was 7-1. He was 5th on the list. Ertz was over 57.5. Jeffrey over 55.5. Aguilar over 37.5. Gronk over 75.5. Cooks, obviously, with that hit, didn't play. Under 67.5. Amendola massively over 45.5. Ajayi just missed his rushing yards at 62.5. Blunt was over 29.5. And Deion Lewis was under 55.5.
Here's something interesting, too. The Eagles won the Super Bowl with a -2 talk stat.
Yeah, I know that the Patriots have 10 plays of 20-plus yards. I mean, they had so many plays of 20-plus yards.
Yeah, 10 explosive plays to 8 for the Eagles, and then of course what each team had one turnover, so it was 11-9 as far as the tox goes. So a very rare minus two Super Bowl winning when it comes to the tox stat. Real quick on Le'Veon Bell, did you see what I wrote about him? How history indicates he'll unlikely to match his 2017 stats after a 400 touch season. I mean, stats are stats and history is history, but, I mean, only four, put it this way, of those 30 different times that a player 25 years of age or older has registered 400 or more touches in a single season, only twice has a player bested both his rushing and his receiving yardage totals the following season, and that was Marshall Faulk, 98-99, and Emmitt Smith, 94-95. Only two other players besides Faulk and Smith increased their rushing yardage totals over the previous season, and those running backs were Terrell Davis, 97-98, and Curtis Martin, 98-99. How much does that, all that article and that stat scare you?
Well, It doesn't scare me. I mean, he put up big numbers, and so if he's around those numbers, you'd look at it as being productive. But as we talked about, you know, much of the numbers that Bell put up are because of the touches that he got. He wasn't as productive last year as he had been in prior years, just in terms of explosiveness or success rates or, you know, yards per carry or yards per reception, you know, however you want to look at it. So, if Bell's healthy, I think he'll be – they're going to use him a lot, and he'll be around those numbers if he's in a Steelers uniform. But again, his level of productivity to me was intimately tied to his touches, and I think you can get a good portion of that much cheaper in other directions.
What would you do with him?
I'm leaning now toward letting him walk. I mean, you know, I'm not even leaning toward putting the exclusive rights, the let him negotiate, because it's not nobody's giving him two first round picks, so it's just kind of silly. So I think I'm leaning toward letting him walk.
I'm leaning toward just tagging him and then being done with it.
Well, I mean, that's the other option. I am not. I guess I was thinking more toward the long. I'm not.
Okay. Well,
it comes back to what I said 2 weeks ago. I cannot believe we're back to having this long-term contract conversation because A, I can't believe Bell turned it down last year, and B, I can't believe the Steelers would offer the same or greater amount of money after a 431 touch season.
Assuming you cannot get him done long-term for less amount per season annually than the tag amount of 14. And look, I mean, he said in another interview with Stephen A. Smith that, you know, threw out the 15 number, more than 15 number. You know, he wants to beat what Adrian Peterson got, you know, several years ago. You know, assuming all those are the numbers, just tag him and run and use him up, you know.
Well, I don't have any. Look, let's just. I'll say it this way. I don't have a problem with that. That's the easy thing to do. And if you let him walk, you have to put pieces together, and you add uncertainty and you add risk. So the easy thing to do, because I think you can make the numbers work, is to tag him and be done with it. I wouldn't do a long term deal with him. I would not.
Yeah, if I can't get him. Will Le'Veon Bell still be considered, regardless of what happens, David, 3 years from now, will Le'Veon Bell, A, be in the league, or B, still be regarded as a top 3-4 back in the league?
Yes, and unlikely.
Yeah, I would go with that. I would go with that. How can a guy continue to get 380 to 400 touches a season, man? I mean, it just,
they're good. They're good. They're three or four good backs coming out every year. I mean, yeah. To stay at the elite, let alone Gurley and Elliott and David Johnson coming back and, you know, depending on what you think of Hunt and Kamara and, you know, whoever. I mean, I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple.
If you sign him to a long-term deal now, you're going to pretty much, you know, be married to him for at least 3 years, the next three seasons.
Yep.
You know, so keep that in mind. It's going to be, I mean, yeah, you could probably, you know, depending on the guaranteed money, yada, yada. But, I mean, if he is of the mind that $17 million is the same as $14.5 million, which is right for him to look at it that way. I mean, if that's his true mindset, then he's not going to sign a long-term deal, one wouldn't think.
His agent or he or they are misguided if they think if he plays this year at $15 million or whatever that somebody's going to sign him next year or to a long term deal at that number. I mean, it's just not going to happen. I mean, guys, look, it's a bad deal for running backs, but the shelf life is 4 or 5 years if you're good and you're lucky. And the problem is you don't get out of your rookie deal until then, so it's a bad deal. It's just the way it is, but it doesn't mean teams have to be dumb. So, go get the next guy.
And not that it's a fair comparison, but I threw this out on Twitter, I think, yesterday morning, David. How many times this past season did your jaw drop when Antonio Brown – what was the ratio of jaw dropping from an Antonio Brown play versus a Le'Veon Bell play?
Oh, jaw dropping was 10-1. I mean, great plays was probably, closer to 3-1, but jaw dropping stuff is Antonio Brown's forte.
Yeah, exactly. So, and look, they gave, what they give Antonio Brown signing bonus? $19 million? And Bell thinks he's going to get, and really that was it. It was almost $20 million was what Antonio Brown got as far as fully guaranteed money. What makes Le'Veon Bell think that he's going to get more guaranteed money than that? Just because he's on his second year of a franchise tag? I just can't see that happening. I said even a few weeks ago, Le'Veon Bell sure did sell it good when thinking about getting a deal done by February 20th. I don't know. It seems like every week I bounce on a different side of the fence with this one.
There's no chance. I don't see it. Who knows? We don't know how these negotiations go. All of a sudden, we could have an answer. So we don't yet. We haven't heard from Art yet either. That's we expect to hear from him here. Probably this week, right? The next couple of days, I would think.
Yeah, the bat signal should be going up for him real quick here. I thought it would happen.
Yeah, me too. So let's do the Hall of Fame on Friday to give us some more to talk about. I did put that poll up there, and it said seems to be the way I phrased it. It seems some debate because of the offensive fireworks about whether Super Bowl was a quote unquote good game, regardless of the eventual outcome. Did you enjoy yesterday's game? 32% no, I hate Big 12 football. 68% yes, my fantasy team killed it. So there's your answer. 2-1.
Yeah, but I how much is this is recency with just because the damn Patriots lost?
I don't know. I did the best I could to phrase it, regardless of the outcome.
Well, okay, let's see what our listeners think. Were you happy with no defense? Well, I mean, let's put it straight to the point. Were they happy with no defense in this year's Super Bowl?
Did you like the game yesterday? That's it.
All right. Send your response to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame, David, on Friday. We'll talk about I finished those punting stats. I think we can go over. I'm sure by then Art will have spoken to the media. Art will have spoke. Art Rooney II will have spoken to the media. So hopefully we'll have a lot of stuff to go over then as well. We sure have burned up an hour and 15 minutes today.
Yes.
Pretty quick. All right. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. All right. I'll argue at you later.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.